Welcome, welcome. You're listening to our podcast, Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. My name is Mark. I'm a registered massage therapist, registered kinesiologist here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We've got a real cool guest. We got two real cool guests sitting on the other side of our Zoom. A man is on the couch. Today's going to be a good day. I'm heading to Florida tomorrow. It's snowing outside. See ya.
Wow, that was just really rubbing salt in the wound for everybody who has to stay in this weather. But hey, guys, it's Amanda. It's actually a very pretty Tuesday morning. There is snow on the ground.
It's not pretty.
But it's not like slushy and gross right now. I don't know why I'm like the weather person every time we start lately. But yeah, anyway, we do have two guests on the other side of our
Zoom. That is like the lowest common denominator conversation right now.
I have nothing to talk about. Let's talk about the snow and the temperature. But anyway, I'm in a good mood today because it's pretty snow, at least for now.
I'm not in a good mood.
Well, what else is new?
maybe I'll get into it. Maybe I won't. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, okay. We did have a little bit of a kerfuffle. That's how I'll describe
it
this morning.
We'll talk about this because these guys do courses.
Yes.
Stuff, so
you guys might be able to relate to the little bit of a fire we had to put out this morning. And it was just so silly. But yes, we'll get into that because right now I'm in a good mood and I want to keep it. So I'm going to introduce our guests. We've got Nellan and Justin on the other side of our screen who are physiotherapists and myofascial release people. That's what I'm calling them. But they'll really tell you what that means. But they had a conversation with Mark and they're also educators and they've got some really cool stuff that they're doing. And so if anybody really knows how we operate, we're like, cool. When we like someone's vibe and want to get to know them a little bit better, our first step is like, let's do a podcast because then we get to know everything about you in 90 minutes. And then we can, you know, see how we can collaborate and work together. So I'm going to let you guys introduce yourself and, you know, maybe tell us the story of how you came to reaching out to Mark and, you know, us possibly forming some kind of working relationship through this. Little bit about your background, what you were doing before physiotherapy, if there was another career, and how you decided to get into becoming physios.
I think most physios don't have a career before.
Massage therapists like all do, by the way. But let's hear your story, guys. I don't know. You can rock, paper, scissors. Who goes first? Or maybe Justin will just say ladies first.
Yeah, go for it, Justin.
Oh, she's letting Justin go first. Okay.
Told it's my turn, so I'll go first. To be honest, I wasn't 100% sure I wanted to be a physiotherapist right away. Nellan's story is actually much more interesting. And I'll let her tell it, but she knew since like grade 7. But it was actually her intense drive and direction that sort of started nudging me in that direction anyway. So I did my undergraduate in physical and health education at University of Toronto. And by the time I was done, I had applied to teacher's college as well as to physiotherapy. And I was kind of on the fence of potentially athletic therapy or even being paramedic. And as I sort of kept going in my undergraduate program, it became increasingly clear that I didn't like the idea of the hours of trauma of, you know, that acute medical care, you know, physiotherapy with Nellan being as gung-ho about it seemed like a much more obvious option. I actually had been accepted to the Master of Teaching program, rejected for the Bachelor of Education, which was weird. So if I was going to do it, it was going to be a two-year thing. And I was on a wait list for physiotherapy. It was an incredibly tight year in terms of applications. So I had my first placement set up. I thought, oh, yeah, I'm going to be a teacher. I'm going to teach young children early how to really feel into their bodies, engage with their bodies, develop a relationship with themselves before they reach that critical age where they start to, you know, go into puberty and they start to deal with peer pressure and these things that draw people out of sport and movement, right? And as soon as I was taken off that wait list, something just told me that's the direction, go that way. And, you know, I drop the teaching thing completely. So now I get to teach on my own time to people who want to learn from me instead of to, you know, groups of children who are being forced to be there. but yeah, I do still, you know, kind of champion the same messages of feeling into and learning about your body and understanding your physicality for health.
Justin, he really just spoke my language. We've talked about so many times how astonishing it is how little people actually know about their bodies. Like, it's the only thing that follows us through our entire life. And like people have no idea. So it's really cool that you have this passion to teach young kids. And I hope there are more teachers like that who see the importance. Mark has zero faith in teachers, by the way.
Just a couple pieces. One, the paramedic idea and walking away from that. I'm with you on that. We've had a paramedic on. She was a paramedic before she became an RMT. And we got into it about like all the stuff that she was seeing and everything else. And she got really burnt out from that profession. And then she ends up having a really twisted sense of humor because of it. Because
she does.
Yeah, because you're walking into all of this massive trauma situations and you have to have a fucking, you know, funny way to look at life to make all of this kind of stuff make sense to you at some point. 100%.
Yeah. Usually you're walking into like the worst moment exactly. in those people's lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, so that's Justin.
The teacher thing, well, huh.
Yeah. The teacher thing, as I said, Mark has little faith in teachers.
It's actually really funny because someone recently asked something about our podcast, and then I kind of went around looking at some of the reviews on the different podcast platforms, and I came across one from a teacher who gave the podcast a 1 star, which is cool. I don't mind getting 1 stars at all. We get those quite a bit sometimes because we, you know, we swear and do all that kind of stuff. And it was an episode, I think, where I opened up by bashing teachers. I think we were talking about dropping our kids off at school and it was just a big disaster. Mm-hmm. And I was saying how teachers like just want to do minimum amounts of work. And this person responds with a 1 star, and the title of it is "Apparently I'm a low bar teacher." And then they went on in this massive paragraph to say, "I will not be listening to this podcast anymore because the hosts should not be bashing other professions," and blah 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 blah. And I'm like, wow, you just really solidified everything I thought.
Well, I mean, the need to get defensive means that, you know, you might need to do some reflection. But
thank you,
there
are, something got triggered there.
Yeah. But there are some really great teachers, and I acknowledge that all the time as well. And as I said, I hope there are teachers who had that passion, like Justin was just talking about, who want to actually impart some wisdom on kids, not go through curriculum.
I'm not saying teachers don't work, right? But for example, yesterday we dropped off our children at school. Their school starts at 9 o'clock. So the bell rings at 9 o'clock. And as we're driving out of the parking lot
at
5 after 9, I'm watching teachers drive into the parking lot. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, you just show up anytime you want to show up type of thing. So the bell rings at 9 o'clock. I'm like, you're not even in your classroom at 9 o'clock. So when do you actually start doing stuff? 9:30, 9:45. And then you got a recess at 10:30. I'm like, and then the day's over at 3 o'clock. And then there's 2 other major breaks that happen. I'm like, what work are you guys actually doing when you complain? Oh, we work so much. We do. I'm like, really? You work on what? A 6-hour day, a 6.5-hour day that you got to be on the clock, and you might have to do a couple hours of work after. In other words, you're working an 8-hour day like most of us work. So, and then you got your summers off and all the rest. I'm like, what is this crazy amount of work that you're doing? But that being said, I would never want to be in charge of a bunch of like little kids.
Exactly. Well, this is the thing, right? Sometimes we think of school as like, oh, this place that we, you know, dump our children off at. But at the same time, some of those teachers, the ones that they're going to remember, the ones that we even remember thinking back to, you know, in that, especially grade 1 to grade 3, that kind of range, like they're going to stick with you forever, right? Like you want those people who really care, and passion shows, right? Your kids
Absolutely.
Will be raving about what they experience. And, you know, we hope that, you know, people rave about their experiences with us. And, you know, even though this person was raving negatively for you guys, at least you had an impact.
Yeah, I think it goes either way. Like your teacher's either really amazing or really awful, but either way, it shapes you in some way.
Yeah, for sure.
I agree. Well, Nellen, you've been sitting patiently. I want to hear your story since Justin says it's way more interesting.
Okay. So I have actually always wanted to be a physiotherapist, like he mentioned. I just so happened to be doing like a career day back in grade 7, and we all got assigned a career, and we got to learn about it. And so it was just like a sharing opportunity. And I got assigned physiotherapist, and I read the description and I was like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. And like, it was just crystal clear. And from that moment on, I just was working towards my physio acceptance and degree. I got accepted first round, just saying. But
yeah, I think my competition was fierce. Right?
but yeah, so I did my undergrad at University of Toronto Mississauga campus, and then I went downtown for the physio program. I took a slightly different path coming out of physiotherapy school than some of my classmates did. A lot of people know physiotherapy as what you see in private practice, like sports injury, et cetera. But there's also like a whole acute care side to the profession, which I actually knew about more than the sort of private side, because I'd done a couple internships during my undergraduate degree. So I got to go shadow some physiotherapists in hospitals. And so I got to see them in the ICU. I got to see them on neurosurgery. So that's really where I felt like I belonged. So when I graduated from physio school, I immediately started working at our local hospital. And I really, really wanted to do what's called cardiorespiratory physiotherapy. So working with patients who have chronic lung conditions, or who've had lung surgery, or patients in the ICU. So I worked in the hospital in acute care. I worked on a surgical unit for just about 6 years before we had our first child. And after having that child and then coming back from mat leave, I didn't feel like I could keep up the same pace and hours that I was doing on surgery. Mm-hmm. It was really fast paced. We did 10-hour days. I would see sometimes like 30 patients in a day. It was really bananas. So I decided, because I thought it would somehow be easier on me, to take a casual position in the ER. So talk about trauma.
You thought the ER was going to be easier on you? Yeah. Oh, Nellen. Oh, boy.
Well, when I started, it was supposed to be 8-hour days. And then very quickly, it turned into 12-hour days. Mm. So I didn't know what I was getting into, I don't think. But as a physio in the ER, you do more consults rather than like active follow-up treatment, because people don't stay, or they're not supposed to stay, right, overnight in the ER. But it got really overwhelming really quickly, you know, with like the overcapacity that we were constantly at. We had a lot of hallway healthcare going on. Mm. So, you know, we were treating patients in stretchers in hallways, and, that was not great. And then, you know, like when we come around to like October to March, that's like cold and flu season. It's also what in the physio world we call fall season, because people fall in their homes and injure themselves. And it was a lot. Like you would walk into, like a triage area, and like some of the things that you would see, like even just before, this was pre-COVID too, so like there's no masks on anybody and everybody's just coughing and sneezing. And anyways, I did that for a year and then decided to move on.
I had been dripping on her for a while about something we had talked about years prior while we were still in school, about potentially opening a practice together. And I had started it as a sole proprietorship. I was working out of my basement. It was supposed to just cover the expenses for coursework and, you know, like registration fees, that sort of thing. And then it became a brick and mortar location, and Nellen agreed to, you know, help make it functional. And then from there it was like, okay, well, we're having growing pains. We want to do more, help more. And the only way to do that would be to find a larger space. So we went all in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you always knew you want to be a physio. That's fascinating to me when I meet someone who like actually went into the career they set out to as a child, because I mean, I currently have two children, and their most recent dreams are one of them to be an actress, the other one to be a singer.
Yep.
Neither of them can sing, but you know
that's
what?
My daughter too.
I'm not going to break their little hearts. Sure. So it's really fascinating when I hear that somebody like knew they wanted to do this for their entire life. What was it about physiotherapy that really drew you in? And then once you were going down that path, you know, what you were describing, working in acute care, you're right. Most people don't think of that when they think of physiotherapy. Why was that so appealing to you? Because to me, it seems like really fast paced, really like hectic compared to a private practice.
Mm-hmm. It's intense. Yeah. I couldn't necessarily tell you like what it was about physiotherapy in that moment that I just knew, besides the fact that I knew I wanted to get into some kind of profession of helping others. I grew up in a very strict Indian household. And generally speaking, the career choices are like doctor, lawyer, those sorts of things, accountant. So I didn't really want to be a doctor. I had anyway, before I had my kids, a terrible fear of needles and blood. And I was like, I just can't do that. And so I was, you know, knowing that I might want to do healthcare. And then I saw this opportunity to work sort of on the other side of, you know, the guts and gore, maybe.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Although I ended up working on surgery, so I saw a lot of that anyway. But yeah, so that's really what led me to it. And then the more I tested my resolve, you know, by doing internships and such, the more I just loved it. So, but it was the acute care side that really got me. And part of that is in private practice, because we've done, you know, we had to do clinical placements through a private practice in school too. And it really did solidify for me. Like I just didn't want to be there. I didn't love the idea that I had to convince somebody that they needed my help. I didn't love, you know, the things that they would come in complaining with. I was like, okay, but like people are dying. Like, you know what I mean? Like I just couldn't, it sounds terrible, but I couldn't empathize with that population. Whereas in the hospital, like in some cases you are literally saving lives, but, if not, you're making a huge impact in, you know, what they're struggling with at that time. So, I think that it was really just that opportunity to do, something that I felt was really impactful, but also like, you kind of get to set your own pace in the sense that like you go and see these patients and like you don't have to convince them to want to work with you. I mean, with the exception of like getting out of bed, but like you're their physiotherapist. They're not like going to go ask for a second opinion of another physiotherapist or like, I don't know, like hem and haw. They know you're there to help them and they are grateful. And it was really a humbling experience and an empowering experience, but the burnout was intense.
I imagine that. Family, are they cool with your decision? Are they happy that you're PT versus the doctor or the accountant
right
or
now.
The lawyer? Because like we had Hushin was on our couch. Her husband Harrelson, they're both massage therapists. She had a lot of family pressure to do pharmacy. She was a pharmacist. And then she was doing pharmacy and she's like, fuck this. Like, I don't want to do this. And then she went to massage therapy school. And I can't remember what she said about how her parents viewed that. I don't remember that exactly.
Yeah,
but
I
I'm
don't
curious,
remember.
How does your family feel now with the decisions that you made?
So my family was actually really supportive in the end. It was really interesting, surprisingly. So we, you know, like I'm the youngest of four. I have three older sisters. And, I think that by the time my parents kind of got to me, they were like, okay, like, we're not gonna like expect anything because my older sisters had not, wanted to go down that path.
I was waiting for you to say all three are doctors. So no, they're not.
No, the opposite. They work in different settings, but mostly corporate stuff. But they were just kind of like, okay, well, we'll see what happens with this one. And I was the first person in our family to get a master's degree and a professional degree. So they were pretty happy with that. They pretty much, when I started working in acute care physio, they pretty much thought I was saving lives. So I was like, okay, sure.
Let them believe that. Yeah, I'm going to my job in the hospital. Yeah. So yeah, let them believe that.
So fascial specialists, mm-hmm. How do we go about doing this? Like what makes you decide fascial is a place I want to be? How do you decide what type of continuing education you're going to do? How does that work for you guys?
While I was in school, I had done the same sorts of placements Nellan had had in hospital settings and hated every moment of it, right? There are absolutely people there who needed help and wanted help, but it was clear that I was not the one who was going to have the passion to be the one to provide it. So I was in this place where I really didn't know what I was going to do with my degree when I was finished. And while the rest of the program was doing their outpatient clinical experiences, I and a small group of people were at SickKids doing a specialized placement. So when the final placement of the program came around, there were 6 outpatient opportunities and 6 students, myself included, who had first dibs on those, right? So you pick your top 5 and they rank, they pick your name randomly and you get ranked into whatever's available at the top of your list and they kind of go through. So I picked 5 purely on geographical location and I got number 6, right? So it's one of those, fate intervening sorts of things. And it ended up being this clinic out at the border of Scarborough and Pickering. And we were sort of living downtown or visiting often Mississauga where, our families live. So it was a long commute. But it ended up being with a John Barnes trained myofascial release therapist who'd been practicing it exclusively for the last 8 years. Right. And, I went in having been told, watch a couple of these videos. And there are a couple of really weird ones online with John Barnes doing some stuff. There's a patient on the table. They look like they're writhing around all kinds of weird stuff. And I'm looking at it like, what the hell is this? Right. And I meet with my clinical instructor on the first day. And he, cheekily is having this intellectual conversation with me about the fact that there's no such thing as a knee. And what he's implying as he's describing that is the continuous nature of the fascia. The knee is a region. We have nomenclature for an area that bends and there's muscles that cross, above and below and all that, but it is one continuous structure of the body, right? So he's, giggling, I can't hear it yet. But I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Why did I learn all this anatomy? What's going on? And he says, just keep an open mind. We're going to go into a patient experience, just observe. And we'll talk about it afterwards, right? And then, okay, sure. So we enter this room. It's kind of dimly lit. There's like some nice calm music playing. And there's this gentleman. He's very like short and kind of portly. And he's just recently had a second supraspinatus shoulder muscle repair. So he has, kind of surgical scars on both sides. And, he's complaining about my back hurts, my shoulder hurts, and, all these things. And, how time sort of distorts when something important happens and you're not really sure where it went, but it just kind of like, ooh, and suddenly it's, something's changed, right? Mm-hmm. I don't remember the series of events, but before I know it, suddenly this gentleman, he has his legs up in the air. His pelvis is up in the air. He's basically, the only point of contact is his head and his shoulders against the table. And my clinical instructor is holding both of his feet up with one hand while he's like screaming and sweating and, there's tears and all this other crazy weird stuff. And like I said, time kind of stopped. Before I know it, somehow an hour is over. And he gets up off the table, sweaty and tired. And he's like thanking him profusely and hugging him. And he's so happy and he feels so amazing. And he leaves the room. And I'm just, what the fuck just happened? Right? So that happened or things like that over the course of the day. And I'm like, okay, there's got to be something here. Something's happening. I don't understand it. But I want to, right? And by the end of that week, I was like sold that this is clearly something that's missing in healthcare that people need. And by the end of that 5-week placement, I was trying to suck up and absorb everything I possibly could about how to take this home and start, working with my own clients when I graduate, doing this, right? So I fumbled along for about a year, before being able to afford to start taking courses. But as soon as I was able to, started training with John Barnes, going to a lot of seminar locations in various places in Canada and the US. And it's the only way I ever want to practice. It's different than everything else.
I want to ask you a question about this. And I don't know anything about John Barnes' style of myofascial work and then how he teaches. I do know a physiotherapist who is an educator, international educator, who used to, and he's been on the podcast before, who used to be like John Barnes' right-hand man, Walt Fritz.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Right. Yeah.
And Walt Fritz had a mm-hmm. parting for whatever reason. I don't remember. We actually talked about it on the podcast. And that made me kind of want to just YouTube or look a little bit about more John Barnes training. And I kind of stopped after seeing one video just because no other reason than I just was busy doing other things. And it was a physiotherapist who was in a John Barnes course. And he's doing this video from his car.
I've seen it, yeah.
Because he left the training. And he left the training and he's like, I just got to really get on here and tell you guys about this. And he was kind of hinting at like, it's a weird kind of cult like type of sessions that happen. And if you're not really on board with what's going on, the instruction was kind of like to make you feel like you're not ready for this. You're not understanding what's going on. I don't know. Maybe just give me some insight to that, because again, I didn't look too hard into it and I just saw that one video and I just ran out of time with stuff that I was doing, but it always left me curious. It's like, what the fuck was that guy even talking about? So I'm curious, because you guys just kind of nodded. Like, I'm assuming you've seen this as well, or you've heard maybe similar types of things. Give me the lowdown on that if you can. I know it's weird.
And you know what? I can give you my perspective maybe first.
If this is something that like you're like, dude, I don't even want to talk about this. That's cool. I'll get rid of it all.
I think that there is a good like number of people who have a misconception about what myofascial release is. Like, there's obviously a lot of other practitioners who say they do myofascial release and it involves lots of other things, like we know about, you know, like fascial stretch therapy and grass and technique and all these other things. Mm-hmm. The way that John Barnes teaches myofascial release is more of he taps into more of that mind-body connection, so the sort of innate healing that we all have. Mm-hmm. And
there's a single underlying question that sort of underpins all of healthcare, depending on how you're approaching it, and that's, does consciousness exist, yes or no? Mm. Right? So the concept being that you either treat with the understanding that consciousness plays a role in healing, or you don't, right? And most of our Western healthcare has to, because it's hard to measure and plan against, it has to assume that consciousness does not, right? So we end up with a lot of therapeutic modalities that are either engaging the barrier too forcefully or too quickly and don't get long-term shift or change in the body as a consequence, right? So before answering your question, it'd probably be better to go into what myofascial release is to us, sure, and our understanding of myofascial release. And then when we sort of talk about Walt Fitz and his stuff, the context will make a bit more sense.
Sure.
Yeah, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So basically, you know, this is where I get to nerd out and get excited, right? But your body three-dimensionally is made of connective tissue, right? And a lot of the people listening are probably very aware of this. We take for granted a lot of this now, but this is stuff that even as early as like 10 or 15 years ago was still kind of being argued and you know, was relatively, you know, for lack of a better word, new, right? It's three-dimensionally made of connective tissue. It's continuous from head to toe, from the skin to the bone and into the nucleus of every cell. Every cell is connected to every other cell physically in contact with each other through integrins and other protein molecules and things through the fascial system. And the fascial system is believed to be composed of hollow hydrophilic tubes, right? So it literally looks like fiber optic cable. If you look at the work of Jean-Claude Guimbertot, he has a video on YouTube. It's really amazing. It's called Strolling Under the Skin. Mm-hmm. I always tell patients, if you can't sleep, you know, I'm showing them the video during your assessment. Check it out, right? It's really cool. But he was the first person to actually put a camera into living patients, because our understanding of anatomy was cadavers and, you know, dead people are dry and brittle, right? They do not have life in them. And observe the internal architecture of the system and how three-dimensionally everything shifts and glides and moves. There are no layers. The layers we perceive are because of dissection, right? So you have this fluid system, and the theory, our best guess, understanding as to how consciousness actually exists in human beings, is that those hollow hydrophilic tubes, those water-loving tubules of the fascia, which are continuous down into every cell and basically create the communication system for every cell in the body at a speed much greater than our nervous system. Water flows through those tubules and conducts light, energy, vibration, and sound, right? So our best guess understanding as to how consciousness actually exists in human beings is that it's in this fluid dynamic flow, this light flow through the body, that we can actually communicate and signal, right? We take in every piece of information around us and we choose what to pay attention to. Our nervous system, our brain can only choose to engage with so much, right? Ultimately, when we're looking at trauma healing, you're dealing with a situation where something has happened. There's this impact. The body absorbs all this force. Boom. Whether it's a motor vehicle accident, whether it's something as stupid as stepping off a curb funny, whether it's sitting 8 hours a day, 5 days of the week, 52 weeks of the year, we develop these bracing patterns subconsciously around what our body perceives as being danger or discomfort. If I sit in that way or move in that way, I'll feel pain. So I just don't. And then as we continue to develop these patterns, the fluidity of the system, the ground substance, the external matrix that the cellular communication is occurring, nutrition is, you know, passing, you know, oxygen and nutrients through the extracellular matrix, it gets glued down, it's stuck. And your body can actually exert up to 2,000 pounds per square inch of force on itself. So what you're dealing with is a situation where consciousness flow has been disrupted. And then you feel pain, you feel disrupted, you feel discomfort, right? And your body can exert up to 2,000 pounds per square inch of force when it's doing this. So we're dealing with a system that can exert more pressure than you or I ever could with our hands or with tools if we're trying, right? So the point is to not force that system, is to wait at the barrier for the fluidity to shift and change. And there's some more physiology I can nerd about later. But the point ultimately is that as you restore motion, you're also restoring fluid flow and therefore that light and energetic flow. It's allowing the body to start communicating with areas that it may have lost contact with for days, weeks, months, years, right? And with that can come emotional release. It can come physical movement. The body can subconsciously move or shift almost as if on its own, in a way that might seem really weird and crazy, and like what you'd see in, you know, one of those churches where, you know, they're, you know, channeling Jesus or whatever, you know, like the point ultimately is the body heals itself when you get out of your own way and allow it to, right? And that can look a little bit intimidating. It can feel intimidating when it feels like you're being asked to do that, but no one's asking you to do that. What they're asking you to do is to feel in your own system and reconnect a relationship with what it feels like to be in your own skin, mm-hmm. right? So that's coming back to what you were talking about before, about that person in the video. I don't know exactly their situation, but I suspect it was probably them feeling very uncomfortable with the idea of feeling, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, I think with every course, it's in the you know, to address what you said about sometimes it feeling cult-like, like it's more about, like, with any course, you take from it what you're going to take from it, right? Like, as physios, we're always taught, you know, like, to add things to our toolbox. And this is one of those things where it's like, if you if it feels like a good approach for you, then add it to your toolbox. If not, don't.
Right.
But innately, it doesn't change the fact that our bodies have that ability to heal. So you know, this person who's maybe not able to go there just yet, it's nothing personal against them, but I think that, you know, maybe there's a little bit of the courses are expensive to take and they didn't feel like they got anything out of it, and, you know, maybe that's just what they were trying to avoid.
And now when I'm thinking back to that video, I maybe I'm butchering this completely because that was a long time ago, I don't think that that person expressed so much issues with the content, but more so with the nature of the instruction. But I'm going to go find it now.
I've got like a billion questions, but there's two that are really like sticking out right now.
Sure.
Justin, before you nerded out, by the way, I was like so invested in what you were saying. I was like, I had like diagrams in my head. Anyway, before that, you had said that when you took the courses in myofascial release, like something clicked for you where you're like, I don't want to treat any way other ever again. So did your practice shift completely that this is the only thing you do? Do you feel, you know, like Nellan just mentioned, tools in the toolbox. We as massage therapists hear that as well. Do you feel you still use any or all or some of the education from physiotherapy really school, or have you just completely shifted and myofascial release is be all end all for you?
Most of the skills that I learned from physiotherapy, you'll see in the first appointment. It's the ability to critically reason through a systems-based approach of what might potentially be at play. It's the ability to, you know, assess and figure out where there is weakness in the body or dysfunction in the body. It's the observational skills and being able to put those pieces together and synthesize a plan, mm-hmm. right? But in terms of treatment, it is primarily myofascial release. And I have tools in my toolbox too. I've learned some visceral manipulation techniques, some joint position sense retraining techniques. I still have, you know, exercise and some basic postural setting things in the mm-hmm. tool belt, muscle energy techniques. Thankfully, myofascial release does include a lot of those structural elements to the process as well, because there are structural releases, and then there is, you know, the body self-corrective process that's also sort of trained separately as well. But the point is, any tool can be made into a, you know, a myofascial style treatment by simply engaging that time component, right?
Right.
I was mentioning that solidification of the ground substance, and I didn't quite get into it yet, but it's what's been found is when you hold a barrier of tension, at about a minute and a half, the elastic part of the tissue lets go, right? So you play with an elastic band, it gets warm. If you put it back down again, it's going to get cold. Nothing's changed, right? That's a minute and a half of stretching, regardless of the type of stretching you do, right? At around 3 minutes, the fluid of the system begins to change. That melt of that fluid I was describing starts, right? At 5 minutes or more, the body begins to release its own anti-inflammatories and vasodilators, and white blood cell increasing, interleukins. It's 1B, 3, and 8, I think, are the ones, right? The point is a cascade of chemical effects as well as physical effects in terms of your function. It starts at around 5 minutes, right? So you can take some sort of structural release you might have learned from a visceral course and just hold it longer, right? Wait for a more thorough melt of the system, right? So you don't have to change how you're treating altogether. You just do it in the context of understanding that underlying physiology.
So you somewhat answered my next question, actually. I used the words be all end all intentionally because we have talked to different practitioners. You know, there's the beauty of our profession in manual therapy is there's so many different approaches and mm-hmm. people do have different tools and different modalities and things that they can bring into their practice. And, you know, we've talked about the idea of there's some practitioners who feel that their way of treatment is the be all end all. So I kind superior. Of did that. It's superior, right? And I kind of said that intentionally. And I really liked your response because what you're showing is this is something that has really shifted the way that you look at a body and the way that you apply treatment, but you're not throwing everything else out the window. So that, you know, that was kind of my next question is, do you feel like this is the way that all of us should be practicing? But I'm assuming based on your answer that the answer is no. I mean, maybe just having a better understanding of the fascial system. Now, do you feel that people who haven't taken continuing education, like, do you feel that the education that maybe I would have received in massage school or you guys received in physio school, do you feel like we already do have this understanding and it's just a matter of being able to incorporate this in practice? Like, do you think that this is something that all practitioners could or maybe should do?
It's my personal opinion that we all should incorporate some of this, whether it's in our clinical practice settings or even just in our own self-care routines. I believe that coming out of school with all the training we had, I didn't learn any of this, right? Okay. I, after that clinical placement, came back and was trying to show my friends the Gimberto video scrolling under the skin. And I was like, check this out, it's so cool. And they were like, okay, Jasmia, calm down, right? Like, they thought I was crazy, right? And that was, you know, with, you know, there's some research evidence to support it. When you are only doing those basic skills you learn out of school, right? Like, so for a massage therapist, the effleurage, the petrissage, right? Like, there's a limit to how far you can get, because as soon as you apply lotions or oils to that system, you're now gliding over the elastic barrier of the tissue. You can't really anchor deeply in, right? So we have massage therapists who still use their massage therapy skills, but what we encourage them to do is, you know, you do your assessment, you figure out where the imbalance might be, and potentially if you're going to do myofascial release techniques, do those first, right? Before the lotions go on. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you can, you know, add some of the other, you know, massage it out, make this, you know, more comfortable, that kind of thing, or the relaxation element of a massage to that, right? So it's definitely something that can and probably should be incorporated into treatment. It's just understanding where and how as well.
You guys may have already spoke on this, and I'm sorry if I just forgot. Nellan, when did you guys take this training together? Did you take the John Barnes courses together, or did Justin do that and then you kind of jumped on board this train?
Yeah, it's the latter. So when we were finishing up school and he was trying to show me all the things that he learned on that placement, I was incredibly skeptical. Like,
and I was a terrible massager. Yeah. She'd be like, you know, I might back sore. And I'd be like, okay. And no, just goes off.
Well, yeah, like I think we all do, like, accumulate these, you know, like minor injuries as we go on in life. And I had some issues that I was dealing with, you know, from studying too long and whatever, like neck pain, all those things. And, you know, we did all the things that our program taught us to do to alleviate all those issues. And it just persisted. It just kept coming back. And then Justin one day, like, he was just like, just let me try a technique on you. And I was like, okay, sure.
I wish you guys could have seen her face. Like, that was the definition of skeptical. Like, okay, really just entertaining Justin, right? Like, just humoring him at this point. Okay.
Oh, you're crazy, but all right. So, so he did this technique on my head, and my body started to unwind. So it's like that innate wisdom of subconscious movement. And my neck pain got so much better. And I said, like, what were you doing moving my head? And he said, I didn't move your head. You were moving your head. And I was like, stop it. No, that's not possible. And then, you know, I kept going with my acute care practice, and I was just like, okay, like, you figure out whatever you're going to do up in private practice, because that's not my thing. But then every time I would injure myself at work, you know, he would work on me.
Go crawling back to Justin with his crazy, right?
Yeah, exactly. I had to go crawling back. Well, you know, he was free. But anyway. Yeah. So I needed help. And he was obviously the most convenient choice. But he wasn't doing a lot of the techniques that we learned in school. And yet I was still getting so much better. I'm a very petite person, obviously on a podcast, you can't see me. I'm 4'11". I am an itty bitty little person. I was lifting like 300-pound individuals from their hospital bed into the chair at their bedside therapeutically. And everyone was like, how? I mean, good body mechanics is one thing, but also, like, yeah, getting that regular treatment, it really, really, really made a huge difference in my body's ability to stay pain-free, but also, like, perform. So,
and for context as well, Nellan did have, you know, a fair amount of treatment in the sort of traditional physiotherapy route as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did that as well. So, like, I went to the sports medicine clinic at U of T. It's, like, world-renowned, right? And I unfortunately didn't get better. And then I another physiotherapist, because, you know, in my degree, they're like, well, you know, this is a problem, you got to work on this. And I was like, okay, I'm going to fix myself. And I couldn't do it. So then I saw, like, a really senior seasoned physiotherapist, and it still didn't help. And I couldn't help but, you know, see that there was something to what Justin was working on. It took like 7 years or something like that for me to really be like, okay, I get it.
Yeah. Like I said, I dripped on her until eventually she decided about the business.
Yeah. But I actually didn't start taking courses until, after COVID, because before that, we were busy growing our family and, setting up this practice. So, I had been helping a lot on the business side of things, and I still do. I'm essentially the clinic director, if you will. Slowly but surely, I'm taking more courses and getting more comfortable with hands-on treatment, because, you know, I was an acute care physiotherapist for so long.
Right. Yeah.
That private work is less well known to me.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I'm you don't have to answer this, guys, but
that means you do.
You don't have to answer this, but I mean, now you've mentioned a couple times, like in Justin's intro, he talked a little bit about you. Like, how long have you two actually known each other? And how was the transition going from like having completely separate careers to now merging and working together? Because I mean, I
and
have
what kind
only
of a strain does this put on your relationship?
I have only ever worked with my husband, so I don't know a different reality. And I have people look at me like I have three heads. Like, what do you mean you work with your husband
all day?
Not
even two heads, a three.
It's three. Yeah. People think that I'm absolutely bonkers.
Even when they, when I speak about that too, I mean, for those of you who are listening, we're married, so you know.
I mean, you guys gave out a couple of clues talking about growing your family, and I'm like, so you guys just simultaneously. Yeah. I knew that you were a couple, but for the listeners that didn't know, they're married.
We're one of those like really like cringy couples who dated in high school. And
why is that cringy? Isn't that like cute?
Our meet cute was in grade 5.
Stop
Yeah, she moved to my neighborhood. I was like a bit of a nerdy kid in class, and you know, basically she was brought into the classroom, sat down in front of me. And you okay if I tell the story?
Yeah.
It's a silly story. I just want to make sure. Yeah. But basically we were doing, you know, that thing that they did in grade school where you're trying to taste test sour, sweet, bitter, you know, different parts of your tongue, right? So I'm setting up the solutions and I'm explaining what's going on. And no one told me this years later, but she said that her first thoughts of me were, if he tries to put that in my mouth, I'm going to punch him.
I like her attitude.
So, you know, back then, you know, we weren't on each other's radar.
But, well, we were 10.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then we started dating in middle school.
Yeah.
And then just kept going. And then we kind of grew in each other like a fungus. So, you know,
we
had a lot of similar interests, and obviously, you know, that matters, right? So it was very easy to, you know, keep working together even now.
So we ended up in physiotherapy at the same time, got accepted at the same time. Those 2 years were challenging, I will say, because not only because we were doing separate undergraduate degrees before that, but it's like we, moved in together to live downtown to be closer to our campus. Mm-hmm. So we were living together. We were in school together. We were doing homework and projects. And, you know, your friends are all the same people because you're in this little microcosm that is a master's program.
Yep.
And man, those were some hard years in our relationship.
Yeah.
But since then, you know what? Me working in acute care and him working in private practice in that period of time, like, because we were speaking the same language, we could like come home and vent and know exactly what the other person was talking about, but without sort of like stepping on their toes in terms of like, well, did you try this? Or, you know, that kind of approach. And now in our practice that we've built together, we really have learned to stay in our own lanes. I stay more on the business side of things and he stays more on the clinical practice side of things.
So does the work stop when you guys leave the office or does the work continue?
It always continues.
All day, every day.
Yeah. Typically there are gaps with, you know, childcare, making sure that they have dinner and get to bed and this one's sick and that one has an assignment and but, most of the time our business is kind of our hobby as well. It's a shared experience.
it's become a little all-encompassing, but we're really passionate about it, so it doesn't feel like, do we have to talk about this now? You know, like, pretty much if we're not talking, this is just what it's like, I think, when you have young kids, but if we're not talking about our kids, we're talking about work.
Yeah,
we get it.
Yeah,
totally
we get it.
So tell us about the course or the courses. Are there several courses that you guys are teaching? Is there a single course? So tell us about the courses. Whom are they primarily targeted towards? Like what, which designations and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so we had put together a course for other physiotherapists to just sort of like as an intro, physiotherapists and other manual therapists as well, to learn a little bit about how we see the fascial system and how maybe they could incorporate it into some of the things that they're already doing, like we were talking about. It, unfortunately, I think it had more to do with COVID, but it didn't get much traction. So, we're reoffering it in more of a digital way. And we're also offering, sort of like a mentoring program for patients actually, to learn more about their ability to heal and what blockages they might have in that healing process, beyond just, you know, not doing your exercises or, or something like that.
There's some commonalities in conversations that we have with patients where it's trying to understand what someone's goals are in the context of their key values, right? And most people, you see their intake form, I'm sure you've seen this as well. I want to be out of pain. I want my shoulder pain gone. I want, you know, more range of motion. I'm like, those are all great, boring goals, right? those are my goals. Increase range of motion from this to that, and, you know, decrease pain from 5 to 4 or whatever, right? I want to know what that's going to do for you. You know, what are you going to be doing more of as a consequence of feeling better? You know, do you want to keep up with your kids? Is it important to you to get down to the floor? And what is it about those things? Do you want to be able to cook a meal? Why is cooking a meal important to you? If you can understand your key values that drive you, you can create a goal, a vision for yourself that has like a touch, a smell, feel, taste, you know, sort of quality to it that mm-hmm. you can anchor what you're doing and why you're doing it too, right? Because otherwise I'm going to give you homework and say, okay, I want you to try this stretch and I want you to do it daily. I want you to, you know, do this postural setting. And you're going to be like, no, I'm busy. I'm bored. You know, like this is boring, you know, but if you're doing it because it's going to help you to get back to being sociable and engaging with your grandkids again or something like that, like suddenly it has this inherent value. And that matters, right? So the course is designed in such a way to help people understand the thoughts, feelings, and belief systems that are surrounding their current experience, help them ask really deep questions about what it is that they actually want and what their story really is, so that they can, you know, feel out what that goal for themselves is and break down the barriers that are preventing them from getting to it, right? So those conversations happen all the time in office, but for those people who either are not geographically close enough or can't interact with us in that way in office, it gives people a platform to learn some of those skills and go through that process as well.
Really cool. How will people find you guys? For anybody listening, website, social platforms, where can people find you?
So our website is myofascialmississauga.com. So there's a lot of really great information there about like what we do, how we do it, what myofascial release is. And then on socials, we are at myofascialmississauga. So we're on Instagram and Facebook. We do have a TikTok account that I've been somewhat neglecting, but we're not much of a dancer, neither one of us.
we did TikTok one time. It took like 4 hours to get the
It was a short little one. It was brutal. But yeah, there's some really great information on there where you can kind of see like how myofascial release is applied to different conditions and how people can work with us.
Really cool. I have a couple more questions. I know Mark's looking at me like, okay, we're almost done, right?
No. I also go ahead.
Oh, you have questions too?
No, not questions. We also run a like kind of media company, Massage Therapy Media.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we do a lot of is free educational events, and we do these typically live. So we normally do them, say, like on a Thursday evening, Eastern time. And yeah, this is like the formal invitation if you guys ever want to do a live, and we send out all the information to a whole bunch of manual therapists in Canada and the United States, and usually we get a really good turnout for that. So it's another way for you guys to
this would to be something that people really would be really interested in. Yeah.
100%.
This would be cool.
Yeah.
We'd be honored.
Yeah.
So I just have like a couple more questions. I thought of this earlier and then the conversation went in a different way. But when we were talking at the beginning about, I can't remember what we were talking about, but I had this thought about the difference, the different experiences that physiotherapists might have versus massage therapists. And so what I mean by that is that a lot of the people I see, now granted it's biased because I'm seeing people who have were actively seeking out massage therapy, right? But I tend to encounter a lot of people that like automatically go for like massage when they have any kind of like muscle pain, you know, it's I'm in pain. But yet when they go to their doctor's recommending physiotherapy. Do you find there's a lot of people who innately seek out physiotherapy? Like, do you, that's what it was. Cause you were talking about, I don't have to convince someone to work with me. And I mean, that's never a problem for a massage therapist, right? Because people still think of massage as sort of a luxury and pampering. I mean, we as a profession are trying to move out of that to show that there is very much therapeutic benefit to getting massage and what it can do for you. Not that, you know, getting a relaxing massage is not therapeutic, because it absolutely is.
We know what you mean.
But do you find that you do have to do a little more convincing, that people don't quite understand why they should go see a physio versus a massage therapist, or vice versa? Like, I'm just curious what you guys see coming through your doors.
Yeah, certainly, because we are a multidisciplinary practice, we get a lot of those questions. Like, people are interested in trying myofascial release and they're like, but who do I see, right? Because we've physios, we have osteopaths, we have RMTs, and we have an acupuncturist as well. So they're like, okay, who's the best person to see? And it's oftentimes this conversation about overlapping practice. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of us are using a lot of the same tools, just generally speaking, in the world of manual therapy. But within our practice, a lot of our therapists are very highly trained in myofascial release, and the ones who are not are learning. And so the treatments can look somewhat similar across disciplines. And so you will get somebody calling saying, like, my doctor said I need to see this profession. I'm like, well, you can really see anyone in our office and get the same sort of treatment.
Right.
I'm like, but no, this is what my doctor said to do. So, there is a little bit of education, I'll say, maybe less convincing that I have to offer to people. But, if someone is open-minded enough and really does want to get better, then the message does usually land, and they understand, you know, that you know, they're going to receive the benefit no matter who they see.
I always got the impression that people felt that if they had an injury, then they have to go to physio, you know, like, nobody else, I have to go to physio because I have an injury. But once that injury had been dealt with, then it was like, okay, well, I have muscle pain, I got to go to massage. And I'm not saying they're wrong, but it seems that people don't understand the overlapping.
I think
scopes.
A lot of that messaging, though, also comes from the medical doctor gatekeeper, right?
True.
Where someone's going to see their medical doctor because they injured their lower back, for example. And the doctor immediately will be like, okay, well, here's a referral for physiotherapy. So it's kind of already kind of set like that from the beginning.
Insurance companies.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is too. Like, the public perception is whatever the doctor's perception is. And so whatever their education was on who does what in terms of allied healthcare, that's what the patient's going to hear.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what people adopt.
We're lucky in that people are starting to sort of hear the term myofascial release more and more. Interestingly, there was some research even just, would have been maybe 2016, 20, I can't remember exact year, but you might have heard the idea of there being a new organ discovered, and they called it the interstitium, and it was all over the news.
Yep.
Even though technically that organ they're describing was the fascial network, and that it was already known about, and even, like, again, I keep saying Gilberto, that French plastic surgeon who put the cameras into patients, he was up in arms about, I already found this, you guys are ridiculous, you know, but no, it doesn't really matter. The point is, people started talking about it, ended up on the news cycle, right? So we are lucky enough to receive the benefit of people suggesting myofascial release as a treatment, because the name is coming up a lot more in posts and media, but also because our office, we advertise specifically to patients who are experiencing chronic pain or complex conditions, if you've seen other therapists and not had results, right? So they come to us expecting to maybe have a different kind of experience and being open to the idea that, you know, maybe they don't have to, you know, see the physio, for example.
Yeah.
I know I said I had a couple questions, but it's just flown away. It's gone. Maybe they answered it. Do you have any other questions for them?
No. Not at all. This was good.
Yeah.
I love listening to you guys nerd out.
Yes, it's fantastic. And I'm really excited to set up a live through Massage Therapy Media, because the other part of our business as well, I think you guys probably know this, we run Con Ed Institute and, you know, conferences. And so education is our thing. And we do get people who send us emails saying, do you guys have courses in myofascial release? Do you guys teach anything about fascia? Like, that's it's something that people are really interested in. So for anybody listening, look out for Massage Therapy Media to post an event with Nellan and Justin that will be probably, as Mark said, like a Thursday evening, as we always do, an hour to an hour and a half of them teaching us a little bit about what they do.
And I also want to talk to you guys off mic about getting you into the Canadian Massage Conference, because we are part owners and organizers of that, and I think this would be a really good addition. Right on. Thanks for hanging out today. This was good.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
You guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapists in a Microphone. Peace.